The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mind.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Oh, yeah. Something like that.
And here we are, folks. Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 188.
188. That's a lot.
A whole lot of episodes, man.
It just keeps going up. It doesn't go down. How are you boys doing tonight?
That's what she said. Good, good, good.
Yeah, okay. You guys good?
Yeah, doing good. Awake.
We got a really good guest tonight. We got Andrew Krause. He is the author of the new book that's coming out, Foundations of GTK Plus Development. And he is one of the primary developers of the OpenL Dev Project. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So, Andrew, what got you into GTK development?
Well, actually, OpenL Dev is what got me into GTK development, purely out of necessity.
So, describe what OpenL Dev is exactly.
Well, about 2.5 years ago, I started the project. I started here at Penn State and was a little fed up with all the integrated development environments out there because they just had all these things that I didn't need. I wanted something that was just cut down, had auto tools in it, but didn't have all the extra stuff that I didn't need. And so I started the project, started OpenL Dev, and actually about a month ago, I just released the first stable release of the IDE. It's running pretty well now. And so basically, right now, it has the basic editing capabilities and manages auto tools for you, has a makefile editor, and all the basics that you're going to need from an integrated development environment.
Now, is this strictly C++ IDE, or can you use it for other languages?
Currently, it provides only three templates, the C, C++, the both terminal projects, and your basic C GTK project. But the whole template system is built on a Perl backend. They're just simple Perl scripts that install the project based upon data that's sent from when you create the project. So, theoretically, you can create a project type for any language you want because you can customize all the build commands, you can customize the execute commands. Pretty much everything is made so that you can do whatever you want.
Now, are you the only developer on this, or are you working with other people?
I'm the main developer. We have a bunch of people that submit patches, and there's a few guys that have repeatedly submitted things, but for the most part, I handle submitting all the patches and that type of thing.
So basically, you needed an IDE to do development work, something that's light. Now, I guess as opposed to the other IDEs for C++, they're a little heavier. For instance, what are the other ones? What have we got? Glade is one.
Well, Glade's not really an integrated development environment. Glade's built to so that you can design your user interface, the graphical user interface, the GTK for your application. Yes, Glade 2 had source code generation, but it's actually depreciated, and instead of doing that, you should actually create a Glade file and then use libglade to dynamically load your user interface. But integrated development environments, they're available. You're looking at things like Anhuda, Kdevelop, and Genie is another one that's a lot more lightweight.
Now, what are some of the features that OpenL does has?
Well, everything.
Does it have a debugger?
Currently, I'm currently working on plugins for debugging and version control, but unfortunately, being near the end of the semester here, I'm scrapped for time. But soon it will have a debugger and version control support. But the important thing about it is that everything's plugin based, so that's not actually going to be enabled by default. You can go in the preference dialog and turn those things on, because my goal is to, when you load up OpenL Dev for the first time, you have just a simple integrated development environment with not very many tools, and then you just choose what you want to add on top of that. And that's very important to me, because I want it to be something that someone that's new to Linux development isn't going to be worried about all these different things that they don't know what's going on.
So what are the dependencies for OpenL Dev to get it going on a system?
Right now, it depends on GTK, obviously, and it depends on GTK Source View, which is a widget. It's derived from the Text View widget that has source code highlighting, line numbering, that type of thing. And it also depends on GNOME VFS, which is an older system, and all their dependencies, so it depends on like Live GNOME UI, those types of things. But I'm hoping they're supposed to be moving GTK Source View's printing support over to the new printing API that was introduced in GTK 2.10. And so once that's done, and once they get GVFS, the virtual file system API, into GLib, then I'll be able to remove the dependency on all the GNOME libraries, and that will significantly decrease all the libraries that you're going to need for it.
Are there packages available with the stable version in different distributions, or you have to compile yourself to get it going?
I have a Debian version. It was built for Ubuntu Edgy, I believe. Yes, it's an Edgy build, but everything else is compiled. I used to have RPM packages, but fortunately, I don't have Fedora installed on my computer anymore, and I don't trust Alien to convert the packages anymore, because that tends to create problems in a lot of distributions. And so I'm hoping to have people eventually that will build packages for their distributions, but it's just a matter of getting people that are interested in the project and willing to spend a few hours a month to work on it.
So I'm assuming you're a computer science major. You're going to school at Penn State, correct?
I'm actually computer engineering.
Okay.
How
is that different from computer science?
Well, the computer science program here focuses almost solely on the software design. But when I came into school, I wanted to get more of a rounded view of the computer architecture, because I already had a lot of programming experience. I wanted to expand my horizons and open up other job opportunities. So the computer engineering major is really nice, because it still gives you pretty much all the same software courses, but they also add in a few electrical engineering courses, logic design, that type of thing. And so it just gives you a more broad view of the computer and of technology and electronics, because you not only understand the software aspects of things, but you also understand how your software is being run on the hardware.
So just out of curiosity, what are some of the course requirements for the CS majors as far as software development? What are they teaching, C++?
Yes, everything at Penn State C++, or at least my program is. Apparently, the new students coming in are required to take, I believe, a Java course and a course in C, which is very nice, because I feel that just teaching C++ is very lacking. But actually, Penn State, my courses only require me to take two courses that actually teach you how to program. After you learn C++, you are just required to know it. The first course teaches you basics, going up to basic classes, and then the second course goes into the standard template library and how to use all the different objects that it provides. But after that, you go into courses such as data structures and your programming language concepts and some of your upper level courses that you're required to program, and they just assume that you know how to program in C++ or whatever language they're using.
So what is the platform of choice? Is it Unix, Linux, what is it?
It varies depending on the class. For the programming courses, the first two, we worked on Windows computers in the labs, but that was only part of the class. But you could do your assignments on any compiler as long as you specified the compiler. Now in the upper level courses, a lot of the tools such as the Superscalar and the VHDL simulator that we're working with are all Linux programs, and so you're required to work on either there. We have a Red Hat laboratory, and we also have a Solaris lab that we do a lot of work in.
That's good to know. When I went for my information systems degree, my master's degree, they were pushing Java very heavily, software engineering. It was more of a business concentration, but we did have a decent amount of programming to do as well. And we actually even got to do some web development when I was there. This is going back around 2000 or so. I'm just curious what Penn State, what the status of Penn State offerings were currently.
Well, I like Penn State's program in terms of the computer engineering, but I really don't feel that the computer science program is up to par, because there's a lot of people that are slipping through the program that really don't know how to code. Because, I mean, you're not really required to do all that much programming unless if you take courses that are specifically designed for that. Like right this semester, I'm in a microcontrollers class that you're assuming that you're going to be sitting there doing assembly all semester, but it's not a required course. That you can get through Penn State's computer science program without really ever learning how to program, which is a really terrible thing to say about my college, but it is really true. And I mean, it really comes down to the fact that they're not requiring you to do projects outside of classwork. I mean, there's a few of us that are doing open source projects, and I really feel that the college needs to encourage that type of thing, because you learn programming from doing it, and just going to classes and learning the theory, you're not going to go out in industry and become a proficient programmer right away.
Well, let me ask you, the other students in the department, what systems are they running? What kind of laptops? And what OSs do they run? Is there a lot of Linux people, a lot of Mac OS X, a lot of BSD people? What do you think the breakdown is?
Well, if you're looking, are you talking about just engineering majors?
Yeah, engineering, computer science.
Then I'd say there's a few people in my class that are running Linux. I've seen in the computer science, computer engineering, in my specific grade, there's about five or six of us that are running Linux, and pretty much all of them are running Ubuntu. The Linux users group here, we just had a meeting last night, and we had about 16, 17 people. But, I mean, we don't really advertise, so that's actually a pretty good turnout for it. And so, I mean, there's a decent amount of Linux use, and the majority of it is Ubuntu. And then, in terms of Mac users, there's a few people with PowerBooks, but you don't really see that all that often. Most people, unfortunately, the majority of people in computer science and computer engineering think that Windows is the only operating system and are very clouded in their view. And it's actually quite hilarious when we go into a class and they're forced to work on Solaris, and they're like, "How do you change the directory?" and that type of thing. So it's always nice to see people being forced to use a Unix operating system, because you really do need to become familiar with multiple operating systems if you're going to make it an industry.
Interesting. That, you see, I got my master's degree back in 2000. So that was the last time I had any academic work done. So I was just curious about how things were these days. How big is the computer science and engineering program over there? How many students?
Well, they have a class cutoff. Your first 2 years, you have an intended major, and then your junior year, you actually declare your major, and that's when they have cutoffs. And between computer science and computer engineering, they'll only admit 190 students a year, which seems like it's not that much, but considering the fact that our class, I think we had 130 or 140 students, there's no point in even having a cutoff anymore because there's not enough people going into the majors to require it. We don't have even enough students to make the cutoff.
So it's still a fairly small program then.
Yes, and that actually makes it very nice because the majority of my classes, after you get past the first year physics and calculus and that type of thing, the majority of my classes have been 30 or 40 people, which is even a good class size for a small college.
So let me ask you, someone who's relatively young, how were you able to get your book published, just out of curiosity?
Well, the whole thing actually sort of fell into my lap because I noticed back in April of 2006 that someone on gtkforums.com, it's a forum that I'm pretty active in, there were a bunch of questions asking, is there a GTK book available? So I'd gone looking for one for a long time, but there hasn't been a book released on GTK dedicated to it since 2001, which was version 1.2. So, I mean, there's a huge void here of years and years where there's no book published on it. And so I was thinking, you know, I might try my hand at this. But, you know, I get into a project and then I wasn't getting paid for it, so I probably would have dropped the project off pretty quickly. And then, lo and behold, Matt Wade, he's an editor at Ace, came to the GTK mailing list and asked if anyone was interested in writing a book on GTK. And so I emailed him and said that I was interested, had actually already started a little bit on the project. So he asked me for a table of contents, an in-depth one, and I sent it to him, and he said, okay, let's sign a contract. And I really respect the people at APress because they took a chance on someone. I am younger, but that doesn't mean that I know any less than anyone else. It's just the fact that I started out doing this younger than some people, and so it was definitely a great experience, and both of the editors that I had there, I really commend them for, because they weren't even fazed by my age, and so I really like doing it though.
That's cool. What are some of the topics that you cover in the book?
Oh, it covers a wide array of topics. Pretty much, it starts out like most.
Like, is this geared towards beginners, intermediate?
Well, the only thing that the book assumes is that you somewhat know C. You can pick up C as you go along, but I don't go into, okay, this is the main function, this is an integer, that type of thing. So you're going to have to know a few C concepts, and at the book's website, I do have a link to a very good C tutorial. But basically, it starts out from the beginning, assuming that you don't have any experience with GTK or developing with that. The only thing that I require that you know on Linux is that you know how to press Control C in your terminal and run an application. That's really all you need to know in terms of Linux. But really, it starts out with the basics. It starts out like most tutorials with your Hello World applications and talking about simple widgets such as buttons and labels. But then it goes pretty quickly into more difficult concepts because I don't want to bore the reader by just covering the same drone type things that everyone else covers. So, I mean, but throughout the book, there's a whole chapter dedicated to the tree view widget, whole chapter to the text view widget, which are very important things. The text view widget is used for text entry, such as multi-line text in documents, source code editors, that type of thing. And the tree view is a hierarchical system where you have multiple layers of rows of text or rows of images, whatever you want. And those are two widgets that you use extensively, so I dedicate almost 100 pages to those two widgets. But throughout the whole book, it's a little over 650 pages, and it covers almost every single widget available in GTK 2.10.
Now, do you do, like, individual projects throughout the book, you know, different types of applications?
Yes, in each chapter, starting with the second chapter, the first chapter is just an introduction to the libraries and installing and that type of thing. But starting with the second chapter, you have at least three examples. Most chapters have six, seven, or even more examples for all the widgets, so every single widget that the book introduces is going to have an example. Because I really believe that the best way to learn something is to look at code. And there's in-depth descriptions of the code, but the nice thing about GTK is that a lot of the functions, you know exactly what they're doing. If you look at, say, one of the main functions that is taught in the second chapter, GTK window new. Well, it creates a new GTK window. It's very easy to understand what the code's going on, and so the text more goes into, so this is what's going on behind the function, this is why you have to call these functions, that type of thing. And then at the end of every chapter, there's one or two exercises that you build throughout the chapters, and so in chapter 7, the purpose of that exercise is to build a simple text editor with things such as cut, copy, paste, open, save, basic functions. And then so then you take that in chapter 9, that same example, and then you add menus and toolbars. And then you go into chapter 10 and you design that application in Glade and load it dynamically. And so a lot of the exercises build upon each other so that you can see how you take an application from the beginning whole way to the end. And so then in the last chapter, chapter 13, I provide 5 completely built applications that the user or the reader can use as a reference for how to structure a full application, how to have all these widgets interacting with each other, because that's really, you learn all these widgets, but then learning their interactions with each other is a whole nother concept that you really have to understand, because you can't just be designing dialogue boxes your whole life.
Well, if you follow a Visual Basic course, then that's all you need to know.
I don't really condone people using such a language.
If you can call it a language.
Yes.
Let me ask you, have you done any QT development?
Actually, I did QT a while back. Originally, when I created OpenLDev, it was in QT, but I moved away from that just because I was designing QT mainly because I learned C++ before I learned C, and C sort of scared me because I didn't really know what to make of it, although I actually find it to be easier than C++. But so about after a few months of designing OpenLDev with QT, I was sitting there thinking, so I use GNOME. Why am I designing with QT? This makes absolutely no sense. And so I ended up switching over and using GTKMM for a little while, which allowed, if anyone doesn't know, that's the C++ wrapper of GTK. And so basically that allowed me to transition into learning GTK, and eventually I just switched over to pure C.
We have a question over here from the RSC. One of the listeners wants to know, what do you think about Real Basic? Have you had a chance to play around with it at all?
Not really. Are you talking about just pure basic code?
No. There's a development language called Real Basic, and it runs on all different platforms. It has nothing to do with Microsoft. It's like Visual Basic in nature, mm-hmm. but it's a completely different thing. It has nothing to do with Microsoft.
Yes, I see it right here. I'm biased against anything that has the word basic in it, but it seems that it looks cross-platform, so I mean that's one of the main reasons why I like GTK, because it is cross-platform. So it'd be interesting. Is this compatible with Visual Basic?
I'm not quite sure, to be honest. I haven't done any development with it. I think the idea is to take some Visual Basic programs and maybe port them in, mm-hmm. do some tweaking to get them going. Supposedly it's really easy to program with, but, you know, I'm sure you know, sometimes easier isn't always better. Sometimes it's always a little better to do a little more work up front. It makes life easier in the long run. That's been my experience with programming.
And especially with the easier languages, you get into the problem of are you losing the efficiency of your applications because of all of the easiness that the language, because the language is putting a lot of overhead in to so that you don't have to worry about all the nitty-gritty things going on in the background. But I'm not sure if that's the case for this Real Basic. I have it pulled up here, but I'll have to bookmark it and check it out after the show.
And then we have another listening RSC. He said, ask you about PyGTK. What do you think about it?
PyGTK?
Yeah.
Python GTK. PyGTK is very cool. It's one of the few wrappers that's actually actively developed, and I've always been very impressed with it. And the nice thing about it is that it is the only GTK version that I can find that the API documentation is actually complete, because unfortunately the main GTK documentation is not complete at all in any sense of the word. But PyGTK, the only bad thing about it is that it obviously adds a little bit of overhead beyond just basic C program, but I mean, it's interpreted, so it's very nice. That I would definitely recommend that if you want to develop a GTK application and Python's your native language, you definitely want to check it out.
So the real advantage of using C, C++ is speed. Once you get it compiled and running, it's super fast compared to any of the other languages.
Pretty much in most cases. It all depends on how you write your code, though, because...
Oh, of course. Anybody can hack some code together.
Yeah.
So you like programming in GTK, then?
Well, I've actually been looking into Python lately, and Ruby as well, because I've very much immersed myself in the whole C and GTK for the past 2 years, and so I want to branch out a little bit and learn maybe a few new technologies, such as the Ruby or maybe some Ajax, but definitely I love GTK because it's great for anything you want to develop for a desktop application. It's cross-platform, and I say it over and over that's going to become more and more important, because we see today that Linux is on the brink of becoming popular in the desktop. Really, what's holding back Linux is that enough people aren't using it in the workplace. People use what they use at work. People buy what they use at work. And you see that more companies are adopting Linux. It's just a matter of time before people start saying, okay, I'm using this at work, I'm used to it, I want to use Linux at home. Same thing with Mac. Macs are becoming more popular, and when you have an operating system that I believe is going to be a flop, obviously the Microsoft operating system, the Vista, I have talked to a ton of people that have Vista and are just completely fed up with it. And I really see a more diverse operating system market coming, and cross-platform toolkits such as GTK and Qt and WX widgets and a bunch of these toolkits are going to become increasingly important, because companies are going to want to design three separate versions of their application. They're going to want to have one toolkit and only create one version of their application.
Well, that's completely logical, if that's assuming that the business person has half a brain and knows what the heck they're talking about.
This is true.
Talking amongst us, you know, we're programmers and hackers, you know, we think logically for the most part. Fortunately, not everybody in the business place thinks the same way.
But you also look at, this has happened before. Back when I was in elementary school, I didn't know what a PC was. I was working on Macs. And why? Because they were putting them in the schools.
Yeah, schools are full of Macs.
Yes, and now everyone uses Windows PCs in schools. People grow up on Windows, and so that's what they use. That's what they buy at home. People aren't going to, most people don't buy Macs at home. Most people don't use Linux at home because they use Windows everywhere else. And so those are the markets that Linux and Mac, whatever operating system you're supporting, need to get in if they want to undercut Linux, undercut Windows, rather.
Well, Apple is making a huge inroads into the education market these days.
That's Ann, by the way.
Yes, they definitely need to do it. I support Apple. They're Unix-based, and I'm under the impression that Mac is better than Windows, so at least it's better than having another Windows user out there. Even if they're not using Linux, they're using a Unix-based operating system.
But then you still got the whole proprietary issue behind it. And
The DRM,
which kind of stinks, but yeah, I mean, Apple is making huge, huge inroads, and that's one of the hurdles that I see Linux has with regards to getting into the education environment, is the fact that Apple and Microsoft have a lot of resources behind them to provide grants and all sorts of other technology, which, you know, ends up locking a school district into their platform, and you don't see a lot of that on the Linux side, you know, that those types of resources to be able to do those kind of deals. Maybe with Novell, and Novell also has a big presence in the education market, but on the desktop wise, and what you see grants going out for, a lot of it does lock you into a specific vendor, Microsoft or Apple. That's just my two cents.
Oh, I completely agree with you, and I wish it wasn't the case. I wish that Linux had millions and millions of dollars to throw out, but unfortunately these companies don't have that type of money, or companies such as Novell aren't willing to invest quite that much money as other companies. Because, I mean, Novell, yes, they have a Linux department, but that's not the only product that they're relying on. Macintosh and, well, not as much Macintosh anymore, just not as much Apple anymore because they're more relying on their iPod, but with Microsoft, Windows is a big market for them, and Office is a big market for them, and so that lock-in is very important. So,
it is. It is very, very important. It's tough to break that, and I know As regards to Linux in schools, I do think Novell is poised to make the biggest impact right now due to them. A lot of school districts still, you know, the wheels of progress turn very slowly at a school district. And there's, Novell is pretty huge in the education market. I know when I was, where I was working in a school district, a lot of the surrounding school districts had the Novell backbone. And, you know, with Novell moving over to Linux, there was a concern about how that would integrate with their current environment and the difficulties of just their eDirectory alone and the changes that Microsoft and both Apple make to be able to integrate well. It makes it almost easier to go with a single vendor solution. You know, if you're going to go Windows, go Microsoft Active Directory. If you go Apple, you know, you got the Apple servers, and they integrate a little bit better with Active Directory. So, you know, as Novell makes a lot of progress in that area, I hope to see that they can retain or even gain more of a footing in the education market.
Dan used to be an admin in one of the school districts over here.
Yes, we actually did. Our school district, I went to Richland. It's in Johnstown, Pennsylvania here, and they used all Novell products. But I mean, it's just a matter of time, I think. But I guess I'm a little biased just because I'm younger and more idealistic, I suppose. But in a few years, reality will punch it into me and realize that it's a lot harder than it looks.
What is a lot harder than it looks?
get accent schools and people's desktops.
Well, I do think it is very, there is a difficulty, but it's coming to a critical point. I mean, somebody's going to break and go with it, and it's going to, you know, make the flow a little easier. Once you have more case studies and more companies and school districts going towards Linux, you're going to see the dominoes start to fall a little faster. But as soon as we get that one or two critical case studies and school districts in position to be examples for the other school districts, because that's another big thing. I mean, you have digital school districts that are upheld as the example to what you should be striving for. And a lot of those are funded by both Microsoft and or Apple. And, you know, those are the ones that are usually upheld as the great examples to strive for. And as soon as we get a couple of those with Linux backbones, which they're coming, and there's some that are already, you know, building up and in place, and a few years of success behind it, you're going to see, I think we'll see a lot more flowing out from those.
I think one of the problems is that there's different interests. A lot of people in the community think that the big draw for open source is the fact that the source code is open, but it, regardless of how you look at it, most people, most businesses, most schools don't really care. They care about the fact that if it costs less, and it all comes down to the money issue for most places, and most people don't care about the open aspects of it. I know that with the Debian distribution, a lot of problems I've seen there, they are unwilling to bring in anything that isn't open source, which I think is a real mistake, because open source has its place, proprietary software has its place. I believe open source is a better philosophy, but if something is proprietary and you don't have an open source alternative, and you don't have the people to make it, I would rather have people use the proprietary software with their open source operating system. And I think that's really what's holding Linux back, because there's too many people that they say you can't use proprietary software at all. It's an all or nothing thing. And you can't really do that when people are concerned about the money, not the philosophy behind the software.
I hear what you're saying. I think that's a tough thing for the free software and open source movements to grasp. I think a lot of them, I mean, a lot of the practical people do grasp that, but those who believe strongly in the foundations of the free software movement want to further their agenda, and that's not a bad thing. You know, the philosophy, and I think a lot of the people in the Linux community agree and with those values, but at the same time, the practicality for the rest of the world, they don't really, you know, give a damn in some respects, because, it, you know, they can go out and buy a system at Walmart or Best Buy that does exactly what they want to do, and that's what their concern is. But, you know, you start to show them, well, there's other ways to do this and using free software, and they might pay lip service to it, but by and large, you know, they just want to get their job done. And teachers and students are the same thing. They want to get their job done. They want to be able to partake in media and educational videos and making movies and stuff like that, which is a bit of a hurdle right now on an open platform. And that's the way it goes. I don't, you know, hopefully it'll change soon. I mean, I was reading an article today off of Alexer about Microsoft's, let me see if that's, I wonder where the heck that is. Microsoft's new media format, Poise.
Yeah, that was
Silverstreak or something like that.
It was on Slashdot a little while ago, but I'm not sure if it's.
Let me see if I Windows Vista, your worst nightmare. Where was that? It was just on there. It was just on there today. I was reading it. But anyway, talking about how this new media format that Microsoft Silverlight. All right,
yeah,
Silverlight.
Silverlight.
That they say it's a cross-platform implementation to enjoy streaming content, but yet the cross-platform means Windows and OS X. And not,
is this that Flash competitor?
Yeah, it's a Flash competitor. You know, and the gist of the blog posting, I think it was that, you know, finally with Flash Player 9 for Linux, that people in the Linux world are able to keep abreast with a lot of the streaming technology and that's available through Google Video and YouTube to be able to partake in this media that's on the web. And when you start looking at moving to Microsoft Silverlight, you're being locked in once again, and it's keeping out Linux users. I mean, eventually we'll see probably some technology to make it usable under Linux, kind of like, you know, the whole Windows Media codecs being available through the use of DLL wrappers, I believe it was, is for MPlayer and all that, which the legality of that's in question. But until Fluendo came along and offered legal codecs, or Linspire offered legal codecs, you know, you didn't have much of a choice other than violating the laws in the United States or in some other countries to be able to partake in it.
It's like here at the university, through our tuition, it's paid that we have a subscription to Napster. So we have unlimited downloading, but to run Napster, you have to have Windows Media, I believe, 8 or above. You can't run that on Linux. And you need that to be able to play any of the music, so I can't play any Napster music, even though I'm paying for it through Linux. And, I mean, I'm not really sure how to get a workaround besides taking out the DRM, but that's not exactly legal, so it shouldn't really be done.
Yeah, the whole online purchasing of music is another, you know, bugaboo for Linux users, unless you're going to go Magnatunes or similar services that focus more on Creative Commons licensed music. Yeah, or
located in the former Soviet Union.
Yeah, yeah. What is it? Sugar. Damn, what is that? Hold on a second.
Air. What's the name of that music service again?
Stuff that's technically legal in the United States.
Yeah, mp3sugar.com. So you don't, you know, you're kind of left out in the cold. And then, you know, you got to look at the ethical reasons, you know, the ethical issues of using that kind of service where the artist doesn't get paid. Where the RIAA doesn't get paid.
Oh, no. I'm so concerned about the RIAA. I care about the artist, but come on.
Yeah, I know.
I don't care about the business guys.
Andrew, I have to ask you, what's the policy of the university as far as file sharing? Have they cracked down on the users at all?
Yes. There? I mean, if you're on campus and the MPAA calls or contacts the university, you have to go before the judicial board, and pretty much they give you a slap on the hand. But, I mean, the university has come out with pretty strongly against file sharing, and that's one of the main reasons why they provided Napster. It's because it's, what, $5 a month or something like that, where it's unlimited streaming. You can't put it on your MP3 player, but you can listen to it all you want. And they did that because they want to make sure that the students aren't going out and stealing music on their servers. But, I mean, if you are caught doing any type of file sharing, if you're caught sharing movies, pretty much you're going to be left out to dry. So, I mean, I don't think
Do they basically block all BitTorrent ports?
Oh, no, nothing's blocked. Nothing's blocked. They just don't stop people from tracking you. And if they're contacted, you can get in trouble. But, I mean, I don't think that they monitor any of the traffic. But I'm actually off campus now, so everything's through DNE communications rather than you through the university. But, I mean, they don't monitor your traffic. The only thing that they do, you're limited to 1.5 gigabytes a week. I believe that's the bandwidth limit per week. And you can't go, if you go over that, then you're cut off to 56K for the rest of the week.
Yeah, one of the things that they're doing around here, and with Cox Communications, the ISP, is the MPAA and RIAA are monitoring peer-to-peer file sharing that's going on. And if they catch you, They can't get you on the download, but if they catch you on the upload, they inform Cox, and Cox, with their firewall software, can identify what files on your system are illegal files that you're sharing out, and they suspend your service until you delete those files. And you get three incidents like that, and after the third incident, you get blacklisted from their service.
Well, I know a lot of, or some of my friends that have been caught doing it, but majority of the people here, at least people that are somewhat technically savvy, if they do download, which I am obviously not condoning, but if they did, they don't share anything. They just take and don't give. Because, I mean, the risks of something like that are just too great, because you don't know if someone's monitoring you or not. You don't know if someone's just downloading something so they can catch you. And so, I mean, most people here, at least most of my friends, are intelligent enough not to share anything on the internet anymore.
And then that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the peer-to-peer file sharing, because if you're only downloading, you know, it's not enough seeds for uploading, and slows the whole process down.
Well, I think a majority of the downloads or the uploads are from foreign sources. I know that last year a lot of people were using the internet too, which was a portal for file sharing to other universities. It was just an educational thing, and that was actually shut down because it was blatantly obvious that it was only used to download movies. I mean, you could, and the speed was completely ridiculous on it. You could get a megabyte a second easily off of it, and so they shut that down, that service down. And I mean, I realize why people do it, and I realize both sides of the people don't want to lose money. The problem is when you have, say, a CD that you want $17 or $16 for songs. Say you want 3 songs from the CD, and the rest, the other 10 songs, you don't really care about. I mean, that's really ridiculous. And so, obviously, people are going to go through and do illegal downloading. So.
But no one on this show.
Hey, Andrew, can we just go back to GTK? What do you think about SVG and the vectorization of the desktop? One of the listeners in the ERC was asking about it.
Well, actually, in GTK 2.8, I believe, they switched over to Cairo support, so all the rendering is done with Cairo, and Cairo's a vector-based library. And so, I mean, really, you don't see any of that in the actual code, because everything, nice thing about GTK is a lot of that type of thing is hidden. And the main reason for that is that since GTK is cross-platform, you have to work with multiple different window managers, you have to work with multiple different operating systems, that you just have a common API that you're dealing with it. So unless if you're doing things like printing, the Cairo is really hidden from your view. But it's definitely nice that they're doing that now, because, I mean, things are rendering a lot nicer. You can do a lot more with your themes with a lot less code, since they have Cairo support in it.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading your book. I've been looking for a good GTK book to learn how to do programming with GTK. And like you said, there hasn't been a really good book in a long, long time. So I'm definitely going to check it out when I get a chance.
It's very unfortunate, because I know how hard it was when I first learned GTK, and the tutorial's very, very bare. They have a few little sections on how to code different parts of GTK, and then they have this huge section, undocumented widgets. And it's just a majority of the library, they barely cover glib, and it's very much a pain to learn a library as big as GTK and all of its supporting libraries just from the API documentation. So, I mean, obviously this is a blatant plug for the book, but it does make your life a lot easier, because you don't have to be just crawling through under-documented API documentation. It's just, it's a really big pain if you don't have a reference like this.
I'm definitely going to check it out. Any other questions for Andrew? Link? Alan?
No, I'm good.
No, I was real interested in the interview, though, because I don't know a damn thing about any of it, so...
Speaking of GTK, I know that Nokia uses GTK extensively.
There are a bunch. I've seen it run on the Sharp Zaruses too. It's definitely, you can definitely cut it down to work with a lot of mobile devices, which is very nice.
Yeah, well, when we spoke to Yari over at Nokia, he was saying that, you know, if you really want to learn how to program for the Nokia N800, you should learn GTK. He says that's the way to go because that's what they use. Well, Andrew, you'll be more than welcome to hang out if you'd like. We're probably going to go and start talking about some other topics.
Yes, can I just mention one more thing about the book?
Sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that in addition to the chapters, one of the goals with the book was to make sure that it was useful beyond just the initial learning of GTK. So it actually provides, I have appendices at the end which provide full references to signals and properties and styles and that type of thing. And they're complete references that aren't complete in the API documentation. A lot of the signals aren't documented at all. And so that's something that I find really important when looking at how you want to learn GTK, because this is something that you're going to be able to use after you finish reading the book. And actually that you can go, I have a website set up at named gtkbook.com, and that has pretty much all the information for the book, but also I'm continuing to write about other topics that weren't covered in the book, such as I put a tutorial up about the key value file parser that's provided by GLib, and I'm going to continue writing about different topics that weren't able to fit in the book. And so even if a listener doesn't get the book, they're welcome to go to the website and check out any of the programming articles or look at the source code for the book or whatever. I just want it to be a reference that people can learn whether they buy the book or not.
Is the book out already, or is it coming out?
On the 23rd, it'll be out. There will be an e-book version available for $25, and it's actually available for order on Amazon for $32.99, which is a really good deal because the list price is originally $50. So you get it, I think it's like 34 or 37% off. So,
if you do the pre-order?
No, I believe that price is going to stand.
Okay.
I think that's, they just keep that price on it constantly. So anytime you go, it's for $32.99 at Amazon. So.
Well, one last question from the RSC. One of the listeners wants to know about the other GTK bindings besides Python.
There are a ton of bindings. You can go, GTKMM is for C++, and it's very well developed. I know that Java GNOME, I believe it is the binding for your, for Java, obviously. And actually, I believe that they're, okay, here it is. Then if you go to gtk.org/bindings.html, if you just go to the GTK website, gtk.org, on the left side, there's a language bindings link, and it has links. The main ones are for C++, Java, Perl, and Python, but there's also bindings for Ada, C#, there's GTK Sharp, and then there's bindings for Lisp, D, Eiffel, and a lot of languages that I didn't even know existed. There's even one for Pascal. So you can find it for pretty much whatever language you're looking for.
Cool. We'll have to check it out.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, like I said, you're more than welcome to stay on.
Okay, I think I will for a little while. My roommate's gone, so...
Use the bandwidth while you can.
Yeah. So what's new with you, Pat?
Oh, not much. It looks like Feisty is going to be coming out in the next day or so. Updates, all the updates and stuff have trickled to nothing, so I think whatever I have on my system here is pretty much it. So if you install from the beta 2, which I did a couple weeks back, there's a whole bunch of patches and updates, and there's a heavy stream of updates and fixes, and it's pretty much slow to a stop. There's not much left. There's no updates the last day or so. So I think this is it. It's been running pretty good. I got it installed on an AMD 64 system. I also have it running on my my Walmart's slave labor Chinese laptop x86, and they're both working pretty well.
Do you know when the release date's set for?
I think it's tomorrow.
Yeah, Feisty is supposed to be out tomorrow.
So running pretty good. Dan, have you upgraded on your laptop or no?
No, not yet. I've been kind of holding off a little bit on that, so that I know that I just probably should have moved over earlier, but now I don't want to be, you know, stuck with trying to contend with everybody else who's downloading. So maybe I'll wait a little week or so. Plus, I'm going to double check the System 76 stuff to make sure that their driver is ready, Feisty ready, which I'm sure it will be by tomorrow if it's not already.
Hey, Andrew, what are you running? Debian?
I'm running Feisty right now. Feisty Ubuntu, yes.
Are you running on a laptop, desktop?
Yeah, it's an Averitec laptop. It's AMD processor, so it's not a very good computer at all. It compiles very slowly.
Use what you can, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, in a year when I graduate and have money, then I'll get a real computer.
Yeah, those System 76 machines are pretty nice. Dan got one a few months ago. And he's been loving it, right, Dan? You love it?
Yeah, I love it a lot. I use it every day.
You said System 76?
Yeah, the System76.com. It's a OEM. They sell Linux, pre-installed Linux systems at a very reasonable price.
They're out there. There are other companies besides them, and I highly recommend other people, if they're going to buy a new system and they want to go the Linux route, to check them out. I'm actually surprised that Dan didn't opt to get a Windows dual boot, because I know he's a big fan of Microsoft operating systems.
Yeah, I wish it came with Vista pre-installed, but hey, you can't have everything. It only came with Ubuntu.
Vista. My laptop came with Vista pre-installed.
Yeah, I know it did.
It was on there for as long as it was in the box. Yep. For me, it was on there. After I got home, it was on there as long enough for me to get the CD door open, and that was about it.
You didn't want to see the superior operating system and all the Microsoft links?
It got far enough to say Microsoft on the boot prompt, you know, but that was all. When I looked at the forums, you know, about the laptop, the one complaint that everybody had with the laptop was that Vista was really, really slow on it. I couldn't really tell you whether it is or not, because I never had it running on there, but I'll tell you what, Ubuntu runs really, really nice on it, you know.
Are you running Feisty then?
No, I'm running Edgy.
Okay, because I'm interested to see, because Compiz is enabled in, or it, you just have to check a checkbox in Feist to get it working, and so I'm interested to see if it would be working on there.
Yeah, I did fresh installs on the two systems I put it on. I'm actually running Kubuntu. Pretty sweet. I can't complain. I'm a big fan of the Debian-based systems. apt-get's fantastic. It's my favorite.
Slackware package manager. That's
Pac-Man.
Says the guy who runs Ubuntu.
I also am also the guy who runs Slackware.
Run Ubuntu.
I may run Ubuntu on my laptop, but Slackware's been running on, in fact, an old-ass version of Slackware's been running on my server forever.
What version is it?
Kind of keep up the times. On my server, I think it's 9.1. Let me look real quick. It might even be 9.0.
Isn't a new version of Slackware coming up pretty soon, 10.2?
No, it'll be 11-something, because 11's out.
Or it's 11.2. I'm sorry, 11.2, yeah. I heard it's probably coming out pretty soon.
It's usually like six months apart too. 6 months, 8 months.
9.10 on my Slackware on my server. All patched and happy. What are you still running old 9 stuff over there on the server, Dan?
No, the server's at 10.1, I think.
Ooh,
I've been thinking about I'm thinking about getting it up to current, but I just haven't, you know, held my breath and taken a chance. Because I got a lot of stuff I compiled myself on there and put together. And, you know, it's always like, when I do this, am I going to, like, break Qmail or am I going to break Mailman? It's always, you know, but it's all patched and everything, so. Because compiling that stuff is such an
old-ass operating system. I'm running 1.6.1 on my NetBSD box that does my my DNS and stuff like that. You know, 9.1 on Slackware for my server. But, you know, if it's good stuff like that, they just
it works, why change it?
Yeah, they just go and go and go, and I don't have any problems, no security issues or anything like that. You know, 9.1 is still supported by Slackware for security updates and stuff. It's awesome. They just go.
What else?
Are any of you guys running AMD 64 or no?
I wish.
Nah, unless you buy me one, I will.
I heard Ubuntu has problems with that, though.
It's running pretty good. The only negative is that there's no flash for AMD 64 natively, so you have a couple different options. You can install a 32-bit browser with all the 32-bit plugins on it. There's also some kind of a plugin wrapper that's available now. I played around with that for a little bit, but I couldn't get it going properly. So I said, screw it. I just installed 32-bit vision of FastFox. Have you guys seen that? It's a build, what Linux and some tweaks put in there specifically for Linux to give it a little speed boost. And I'm running that, and all the 32-bit plugins work great. It's fantastic. Can't complain.
Yep. You're going to send me over a nice 64-bit system, right, so I can check it out. It will do a new server panel. That's going to hook me right up. That's what he's telling me.
It's on the way over.
Should be here soon, then, because you're only, 5 miles away. So.
Server party at Link.
Yay! What are you doing, sir? Actually, you know what I was really thinking about doing? And I know that, you know, everybody's going to gasp because this is heresy. I was thinking about... I still have that my old broken laptop, right? My stink pad. The only thing that's broken on it is the display. And it's a 1.something-something gigahertz laptop. So I'm thinking, instead of running all these old craptacular machines that I have, I could probably, you know, do myself a little bit of an upgrade and use, you know, a couple of my old busted crappy laptops too, and shrink the amount of space that I need, right? So the only way that I can think to do that and do a server change or upgrade and get away from the old PC equipment that I'm using for my server now would be to use... I have an Ultra 2 with a gig of RAM. And I thought maybe I could use a Ubuntu server on the Ultra 2 for my web server. And then a couple of my other servers I could, you know, squish into a couple of old laptops of mine. And that would save me some much-needed space and heat and all kinds of other stuff, too. But I really need to have another faster laptop in order to do that. Because I have to run, you know, one of the servers that I run is my Trixbox server for my phone system, right? And I've heard people running Asterisk on 500 megahertz machines and stuff before. However, I think I'm running on a 700 megahertz machine now, and I think it lags a little bit. Maybe I'm, you know, full of shit and it's just my, you know, internet access that lags a little bit. But I think that it's my Trixbox lags a little bit, so I'm kind of hesitant to put it on a slower machine, like a 400 megahertz laptop, which is the only other thing I have. So unless there's anyone out there listening that happens to have, you know, like a 1 gigahertz laptop or somewhere close to that that has a busted screen and wants to get rid of it real cheap, let me know.
Just such a pain in the butt replacing screens.
I don't want to give up my freaking my Slackware server though. It's a hard thing to give up. However, I really like the Ubuntu. I don't know are any of the rest of you guys running the Edgy Server Edition? It works so good. You know what I mean?
My blog is running Edgy Server.
It doesn't it work really well? I mean, I was really, really impressed with that. And, you know, it takes a lot for me to say that because I've been running Slackware servers forever and ever. But I really, really was impressed with the Edgy Server Edition. Except for the fact that it doesn't install SSH by default. Like SSH Server.
And that's kind of weird.
Stupid, yeah. Like, how are you supposed to... They expect you to have a local terminal connected to all your servers? Just not, I don't know. But other than that one thing, I thought it worked really, really well. And I'm happy with using it at work. So that's why I've kind of been leaning to, you know, if I want to do a upgrade kind of thing. I got this Ultra 2 sitting here doing nothing. Maybe I should just run, you know, Ubuntu Server Edition on that and see what I can come up with. Don't know. What's everybody's opinion? Let me know. See, no one's saying anything on the IRC.
I was thinking Link's of trying
talking. Everybody shut the hell up. Yeah.
I was thinking of trying some BSD for the mail server over here. I was tempted to try it out. Maybe OpenBSD or FreeBSD.
For a mail server?
Yeah.
Why?
Why don't you just set up an Exchange server?
Exchange. Just to try out some BSD. I haven't run pure Unix in a long time. I was going to check it out.
Slap some NetBSD on there, man.
You like the NetBSD?
Used it. I love NetBSD. Used the goodness.
He gets a kickback from NetBSD every time they sell something that he shills,
yeah.
Right?
I've always liked NetBSD. They still need to get their shit together, though. They've been doing some weird stuff lately with their development and all, and things have been lagging a little bit, but it's still good stuff. You know, it's still good. It's got a smaller footprint than the FreeBSD. It's just as easy to use, and it's not as political as OpenBSD, I guess.
Speaking of OpenBSD, have you heard that song, that last song?
Mm-mm.
The latest BSD song?
The last one they released? No, I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah. A little bit of a smackdown on Linux.
that would be, or for the chorus.
Yeah, there's a line in the song where it's like, if your brother goes penguin on you, then he's not your brother.
Yay. What do you do?
I think Theo is the one who wrote that.
Could very well be.
Is he coming on in the near future?
I've traded a bunch of emails with him, and it sounds like he's very busy. I'm trying to nail down a date with him. He said possibly May, so that's what I'm going to shoot for to get him on.
That'd be an interesting show.
I'm sure he's got some interesting things to say.
I think we ought to get him and the NetBSD developer team on at the same time. Now that would be an interesting show. For those of you who don't know, there's a lot of history there. OpenBSD is a branch off of NetBSD, and where Theo was not happy with the development, wasn't going his way in NetBSD. So.
Yeah, Theo's very opinionated, and he feels very strongly about certain things.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's not any worse than Armin.
Not at all.
We've had plenty of colorful people on the show. Why not? Right?
What the hell?
Like to hear from him? Why not?
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. Dun. Alan, what's up with you, man?
Typing in the background.
Alan, what's going gay?
Working at the. Hoping that the weekend's going to be nice so I can get some riding in.
It's supposedly actually going to be nice this week. For once.
Supposed to be 70, which is... sadly enough, I brought the bike out of storage and gave you guys another 3 weeks of winter. So, I apologize for that. But
man, oh man.
Hopefully it ends soon. And summer starts again. Or at least spring.
Or at least
besides spring, that, unfortunately, yeah. I've been just working a lot, so. And that's it for me. Exciting life of getting up and going to work.
Listening to, on the way to Philly the other day, I was listening to the radio, and they're talking about how you know that you live in Pennsylvania. And one of the people, I think, called in and said, well, you have to, you know, you live in Pennsylvania by the seasons that we have here. And they named a bunch of seasons, and the seasons that they listed off in Pennsylvania were something like...
hunting season?
It was almost winter, still winter, almost spring. And that was it. Those were the four seasons.
That sounds like Minnesota. That doesn't sound like Pennsylvania.
And it's pretty funny, though, because we keep getting just, real close to actually having a springtime. And, oh, wait a second, we have to have a hailstorm or something like that, It's pretty funny. But, what they leave out is the fact that, in the middle of summer, it's 120 degrees for two or three weeks at a clip. Like, worse than frickin' Texas or something like that. That's my problem. My problem is, I live on the East Coast because I like to have cooler weather. Otherwise, I would have just moved to Arizona if I wanted to live in an oven or something.
But it's
Arizona's actually pretty nice. Yeah, it's actually real nice out there. They do get snow up in the mountains out there.
I don't care how freaking dry it is at 120 degrees. It's still hot,
Down here?
Dry heat.
Down here, you got to turn the heater on in the morning and then the air conditioner on in the evening.
Yeah. Well, you have the beach there and stuff too, right?
Yep.
Come summer, it's only going to get worse, Dan.
Dude, I'm waiting for summer because I'm going to be hitting the beach every single freaking weekend.
I don't know. Every time we've stayed down in Virginia Beach, it's been the only beach I've ever been to that didn't have an offshore breeze. I usually get the breeze And Virginia Beach was always like just dead stagnant air, no matter when we ever went down there. So hopefully you go where you find some breeze.
I don't care about a breeze. I just want to be in the ocean. Floating on the waves.
Not me, man. There's like creepy crawly shit in the ocean. I don't like that.
It's creepy crawly shit up in the woods,
shit,
so.
Shit you can't even see. Yeah, well, you can see creepy crawly shit in the woods, man. It makes, you know, rustles through the leaves and stuff. In the ocean, you can't even see that. All you know is, you know, the next thing you know, a jellyfish stuck to your leg or something like that, you know. I don't want to do that crap. That kind of crap hides on you. That's not fair.
Yeah, and fishing too. A lot of fishing. Yeah, we got jellyfish all over the place here. Fishing. We went up to Pike Moore into Yorktown, and was right there by the river. And you're standing on the edge of the river, and there's all these jellyfish floating around in the river. And then it was dead.
Now see, you see that kind of shit right there, and a guy like me with some logic says, you know, hey, that's interesting. I'm going to stay the hell out of there. No, Dan just completely says, oh, look at that. There's a whole bunch of jellyfish there. They probably have stingers. Let's get in there.
Let's go swimming.
Let's go swimming. Let's check that out.
Jump right in. It's not that cold.
Let's get in. Hey, look, hon. Maybe if I smack them, they'll get mad. Give me a break.
You're in there bopping around in the waves, and you feel stuff brushing against you. You're like, ooh, what's that? Ooh, what's that? Ooh,
you ever
get
stuck by one of those things, man? It hurts.
Not yet.
Oh, man. I have once, man. It was not fun.
Not yet. I have not been stung yet. You know, do some body surfing, and you come in, and it gets real shallow, and the wave just drags you right along the bottom, and you grind through the rocks and the sand. And yeah, that's fun. Good times. It is. Back when you were, like, real young, you were fearless, and, you know, you just take all the waves you can get, those big waves, and they pick you up, and they slam your head first into the ground, and you're like, oh, am I going to die? And then you just get up and do it again, and now you're a little older, and you're like, wow, man, if this thing slams me into the ground and I drown, well, who's going to take care of my kids?
Right. And you know what? And you get out of the water, and where do you go after you get out of the water? You go on the beach, right?
Right onto the sand.
Like, every time I've ever been to a beach, you ever notice that beaches are like, they're like giant drawing areas for the local feral cat element? There's always, you know, even like, especially like Atlantic City, right? Atlantic City, you go to the boardwalk, there's like a zillion feral cats.
Atlantic City has
cats.
A huge population of those.
There's a zillion of them. So here you are, if you really stop and think about that, you're out there playing in the water where fish is crap. And then, to clean yourself off, you walk into a giant litter box.
Don't eat any chocolate that you didn't bring. Just don't eat any chocolate that you didn't bring yourself.
Yeah.
And you'll be okay.
Not me, man. I will just, I'll just hang out in front of my TV at home and get my, my CRT suntan. And,
nice
you know.
Nice wrinkle out to you.
If I want to go out for a nice outing, I'll go to the supermarket or something, you know, someplace where it's already nice and air conditioned.
That's a fun guy on vacation.
Well, I love going on vacation. I just don't want to go hanging out and play in the litter box. That's all. I have cats. I know what litter boxes look like and what they smell like. I don't have to, like, go investigate, you know, what the world's giant litter box, you know, looks like or whatever.
Why don't you cover up after yourself, man?
You do that. Go someplace fun on vacation. Like, I want to go see, like, the National Computer Museum or something like that. Or the.
I want to go to Alaska.
There, now you're talking. Nice country. It's not a giant.
You can go hang out
box.
With Rabbit Ear.
Yeah.
Actually, I want to take one of those cruises.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
Like the one that just rolled over out there in the ocean, huh?
Oh, that was off
that's
of Greece.
Fun part.
Off of Greece.
See, now that's one of the reasons why I don't want to take a cruise, because you end up being in the ocean anyway, and I don't want to go in the freaking ocean.
Those things don't happen very often. And if they do, well, you just figure it's more of an adventure than you really planned for.
Right.
You know what doesn't mix well?
Yeah.
The beach and laptops.
Okay.
That doesn't mix well.
No?
The beach and lap dances?
Laptops.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, usually the beach and digital cameras don't mix too well either. But that's the way it goes.
You gotta put them in the little condom things, yeah. The camera condoms.
I've never seen a camera condom.
Well, there we go. We just made up something new.
Then you're gonna get the
yeah. You know, on the front of the camera, it's got the little flap on the bottom. You lift it up, and that's where you put the condom on.
Not a used one, Alan. Not a used one.
Well, it wouldn't be clear then.
But listen, we keep getting some people that are asking us to mention the Tux 500 campaign back on.
Ah, yes.
That or the controversy surrounding it that was on Alexa today.
Yeah.
People pitching that it's not a good thing?
People are weird, you know. It's a good thing. It's for a good cause. What could you do to make yourself feel better with a dollar bill, shiny, crisp dollar bill? You can go over and donate it to the guys at tux500.com. That's www.tux500.com. And for those of you who do not know what this project is an attempt to raise a whole bunch of money for a Indy 500 car to have Linux plastered all over the side of it, so that everybody sees Linux in the Indy 500. And regardless of whether or not you actually watch the Indy 500, like I don't, I could really give a shit, right? I'm not a race car fan. I can see the worth in doing something like this because there are a lot of people who watch the Indy 500. And even if, you know, even if it really doesn't lead to somebody switching their operating system, perhaps it's just another step in familiarizing people with the word Linux, and maybe they'll be curious enough about it to do a little research or inquire with a friend. And every little bit helps, right? And you know, Lord knows that Linux can use all the good press that we can get. So, like I said, everybody get out your dollar bill, head right over to tux500.com, and donate that sucker so that maybe we can get us a nice little race car. Right?
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, right now they're up to $5,753.26 in the past 8 days. They gotta make it up to $350,000.
It's a lot of money, but, you know, we could do it. That's not that far out of the realm of possibility, I think. We just want to make sure that the graphic is really big, because, like, those cars go really fast.
Isn't the graphic going to be dependent on the size of how much they get, how big the graphic's going to be, right?
It's a whole side graphic, as far as I know, and they have a design contest, I believe, that they're doing at the same time, in order to decide what it is that they want to put on the side of the car.
Okay.
They have an example up there now, which I think looks just fine. But there's 33 days left to donate, and they want $350,000, and after 8 days, they have only raised $5,753.26, I guess. But so, you know, anybody with a dollar or two to spare, please head over there and do that. Let's see if we can get our favorite operating system plastered.
So what are people bitching about?
Th- that Alan doesn't talk enough?
Yeah. They do that all the time.
What are they complaining about? Well, on...
You're burning fossil fuel? Is that their problem?
No. Well, I guess the big bone of contention... where was it? On LX or somebody's blog.
People think that the money's wasted?
No, they think it's a scam, a pump and dump scam. Somebody was complaining about that. I don't remember where the article is. I read it today. Let me see. Got to go back through the archives now.
I think you'd be good. You know, even if it is a scam, what do? You lose a dollar, right? If it's not, it's a cool idea. Get Linux blasted on the side of a race car. I think it's a good idea.
No, I'm fine with it. I don't think it's a scam. I don't know. Go on LXer.com. It's on there somewhere. Yeah, I'm going to see.
It's on there somewhere, right?
Dan's excited.
Dun, dun, dun. There's a lot of there, a lot of articles on there. I can't remember what the name of the article was. Or the blog. Oh, Tux 500 is a pump and dump scam. Boy, that generated a lot of controversy on LX. There's 65 posts to that. Now, and at the risk
most
of giving...
positive or negative? Or
no, positive towards... negative, kind of negative towards the article about it being a pump and dump scam. I posted, Penguin Pete had written it, and it's something, you know, it's something to look into. Penguin Pete has his opinions.
Well, it looks like you only need $25,000 to get a logo in the first place, so they're only about $20,000 away from that, at least.
Yep, they get one of those logos that'll be about the size of a those look
size of your fist on a car that's going 200 miles an hour.
Big blur going by.
Well, hopefully
hey, what's that little white spot?
Well, if the car wins, then you get pictures with the driver. So
true, yeah.
That'd still be cool, anyhow.
I think it would. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah.
You know, it would hit a news article somewhere. You know. They're going to say that this, you know, this community group got their logo on the side of a Indy 500 car. It'll be in the news somewhere, you know. Even if it's just, you know, even if it's a logo the size of a thumbprint, it's not going to be a big corporate thing, so it'll make the news someplace. And that can only be a good thing, you know. The problem is raising the money, and that's, you know, where we're relying on the community, which, of course, is... rallying a community the size of the Linux community is a problem in and of itself. So the least that we can do here is make mention of it.
And maybe Chess Griffin and his wonderful audience will contribute. And Dave Yates and his wonderful audience will contribute.
I heard Dave and Chess were going to, you know, they were putting up a couple grand each, you know.
Really?
Yeah, they were challenging us, you know.
No, dude, you know, I can't. You know, they are far.
So that they would match anything that the Linux Link Tech Show group of people could put up. So
I thought you said they were going to double it.
it could be double.
Quadruple it.
I misstated myself.
And that's why they're much bigger and better people than we are, because they're going
indeed,
to.
Yes.
So. You just, how much did our listeners contribute already? 5,000 and what? And they're going to, wow. Double that?
Double it each.
Each?
Yes. Each.
I didn't know those two guys were doing that well.
Each said they were going to double it, so.
Well, Chess is an attorney, so he's making big bucks.
Well, there you go, right?
That's it.
And Dave's an important guy. Keeps people from getting, what, botulism or something over there? Yeah, to be doing good.
But is he doing, he's a chemist for like food additives or something?
He makes crystal meth.
Crystal? That's not hard to do, actually.
Well, then he ought to have a lot of money.
He does. He makes crystal meth.
Experience there or what?
I've read the article, that's all. Doesn't sound like it's very difficult to do.
You read the article about Dave Yates making crystal meth?
It's the real reason he had the basement redone.
That stuff is evil, man.
Had to get rid of all the contaminated stuff downstairs.
That's horrible, that stuff, man.
I always wonder why he had the floor sealed like four times first before the carpet got there, you know? I guess you got to put that epoxy layer on there so that it keeps all the dust down. You don't want to get any of that inside your meth lab. Chemical contaminants and all.
That's horrible stuff, yeah. Man.
It really is, though. You know, I read articles.
See what it does to people, man?
Apparently, like Pennsylvania around this area, for some reason, they've had a lot of these meth labs and stuff spring up. And I guess they've had problems with local law enforcement, right? That they go in and they bust these people and they clean up the labs or whatever, or bag the stuff for evidence, and like years later they're getting all sick from the chemicals and shit.
Exposure and stuff.
Right, exposure from the chemicals. So,
if they know it's a meth lab, then they'll go in with hazmat suits.
No
kidding. Clean out the place.
Nasty.
I see what it does to people, man. You see those pictures of people, like, you know, before and after, what they look like, it's horrible. The teeth get all rotted out. They look like they turn into friggin' zombies.
Yeah, man. That's the way to turn your life around for the worse, right there. Start some of that crap.
That's some good stuff, though.
How the hell did we get into, you know, from Linux Indy 500 100 car to
crystal meth?
But how are we going to raise money? Crystal meth.
Crystal meth.
And which tangent are we going to go off on next?
I don't know.
Hey, new version of GIMP came out.
Yeah, it's just bug fixes, though.
Oh, is that all it is?
Yeah. But still good, you know? GIMP, good stuff. I like the GIMP. I like the GIMP a lot.
Except the Photoshop users are always bitching about the GIMP.
Yeah, well, see, I bitch about Photoshop because I don't like Photoshop.
What about that thing that you can, you know, do to the GIMP to make it look like Photoshop?
GIMP Shop.
That's it.
But if I don't like Photoshop, why am I going to make my GIMP look
really
like Photoshop?
I don't very much, so.
You use Corel's Paint.
Microsoft Paint.
Corel Draw.
Paint.
remember that presentation we went to at the Lehigh Valley Computer Users Group, Lake, the first time that we met, you and I met, and it was that, that Corel Draw presentation where it was like, you could use old versions of Corel Draw for free because they put them out there. And that went on for like, what, 2 hours?
At least.
And then he like would show all the things he made and how he did it, and then he passed the things around.
Right.
Holy
crazy! But you know, I did get a really, really cheap free mouse pad out of that. So.
Do you still have it?
That 4 hours of my life I'll never get back. I got a 25-cent mouse pad for.
Yeah.
No, I don't have it anymore.
I said, wow, Lehigh Valley Computer Users Group. It sounds like it's going to be right up my alley.
And there you have it, folks. Now you know what actually happened to create the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group as not an offshoot, but a separate entity from the Lehigh Valley Computer Users Group.
I never had the privilege of going to one of the Lehigh Valley Computer Users Group ones.
I never been to it either.
You are missing out. You can get the general gist of it when you think of yourself going there when you're perhaps 80.
That was the impression I got from just a little bit of seeing some of the people who actually went there. Yeah, I didn't think I was old enough yet for it.
once you're inducted into the AARP, you get a lifetime membership.
Yeah,
you give your membership discount. No, in all fairness,
I got a few more 4 years before I get my AARP card. So
the people there were really nice.
Yeah, they're good people.
It just was not the kind of group that Dan and I were looking to get into at the time. So, you know, we were primarily interested in Linux and at a much different and more technical pace than the things that they were doing there. So, you know, in all fairness, that's what happened. But it was pretty funny, I have to admit. And then they had that Microsoft thing afterwards that we went to.
Yeah, we set up, you know.
What was it they're demoing at 2000?
No, Windows ME. Well, you know, was there two?
Yeah, it was ME.
Was there two we went to? I thought there was, you know, I know there was the Windows ME. I don't, maybe we were invited to the 2000 one, too, where we set up shop.
That was a really long time ago. But, yeah, it was pretty interesting. I'll say that for sure.
Windows ME, it's a great experience.
Something else. Now, you guys are all from the Lehigh Valley Lug. What types of things do you do? Because we're searching for other things to do here at the Penn State Lug, and so I'd be love to hear some ideas.
Primarily we eat.
we have dinner once a month right now.
Lately it's been a very late lunch at a diner where we all get together and talk shop and talk about different projects and things like that. Hasn't been very formal lately, just due to a variety of circumstances. Nobody really has a whole lot of time to make any presentations or even to try and hunt somebody down who will. And Dan used to do a wonderful job of that before. I don't know where the hell he got his energy. He had something ready every damn time. Now that he's gone, I just do not have the time to do that. And if no one else is stepping up to the plate, by golly, I'm going to meet him over at the diner for a sandwich instead. And we can talk shop there. But, you know, in all honesty, I kind of like the informal kind of meetings where it's just a bunch of people with the same or common interest that get together, you know, over a sandwich or a beer or what have you, and talk shop about whatever it is, you know, that they're interested in working on at that point in time. And sometimes it can lead to some really interesting conversations.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't let that scare you away from having
a meeting. They fall into the trap of doing an install fest every month.
Right.
we haven't had an install fest for a few years, but next year we're going to have a barbecue at one of the guys' houses and have an install fest there. And most of our meetings are pretty formal. But finding presenters is now a problem.
Yeah. A few years ago, Dan and I had an install fest for the Lehigh Valley Linux User Group, and Dan and I showed up.
Yeah.
And that was it. So that hasn't been a real big hot item on the itinerary lately. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, if no one shows up, then, hey, we have barbecue. Who cares?
Exactly. That's exactly right. See, now you're back to the food and beer. That's the way to go, man.
See, that was our problem.
That was the problem. The problem we had, we probably didn't have food.
Yeah, we didn't have a follow-up plan for that. A backup.
Well, see, we didn't really have money until this year to have food, because you get $50 from the university for doing a hotspot. At like when you go to the student union for a night and advertise your group, they give you $50. So we didn't have any money for food before this year.
And now you got $50 for barbecue, right? So you're set
yep.
to go.
Exactly.
It's all about the money.
I'm checking this website out beyond the red line, which is that Battlestar Galactica game. They have a version that runs on Linux. This looks pretty cool. Somebody was mentioning it on the RC.
What's the website?
The website is www.game-warden.com/BSG.
So put it in the RC.
GameWarden.com?
Yeah, it's www.game-warden.com.
Oh.
/ BSG.
Linux release. See what it looks like.
Looks interesting.
Well, I'll pack is it, is it, that URL in the IRC a few more times here.
Is that... huh, I wonder... That looks like it's based off of, like, Free Space or something. Let's see what it says. Yep, that's right. It's a standalone total conversion for the award-winning Free Space 2 released by Volition and Interplay for the PC. Okay. No, Beyond Redline is a standalone conversion, will not require Free Space 2. Wow. Everything you need is included in the download. Wow. Download Beyond Redline demo for Linux. That looks interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Is this a diversion to World of Warcraft for Dan? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. Dan's kind of getting burnt out on World of Warcraft.
The intervention's helping?
Yeah. Life is helping to curb the World of Warcraft. And, you know, speaking of life, not to bring the show down.
People moving into Second Life soon.
Yeah, not to bring the show down or anything, but I really want to go out and say to our audience out there, really, thank you for all the positive and encouraging emails. I really, really appreciate all those. Thank you very much.
Yes, there were many words of encouragement in our email this week for Dan.
And last week. And on the IRC and on the forum and on my blog. And, you know, things are going along. It's tough, but, you know, we're getting more stable. So.
That's good, man.
Baby steps. But it's tough. It's tough. Baby steps. Next topic. Dead silence?
Next.
Do we have a next topic?
I could go for next. A Slurpee.
I got a Mio.
What's a Mio?
I got a Mio.
What's that?
I got I have a Mio C220, which is a one of those nifty little GPS units.
Is that what we hear talking in the background?
Yeah, it tells you that, you know.
Wait, is that telling you where you're going in your house?
No,
to the bedroom.
It has this neat flyover mode. Like, I can choose a destination point, right? And have it do the map, map out a route, and then I can press flyover, and it simulates me driving the route, and it talks to you while it simulates it, just like it would while you're in a car. It sounds like this.
Next left, then right.
And while it's doing that, it's like, you know, driving up the road. When it drives up the road and it makes the next turn, it gets ready for the next thing and it tells you again.
60 yards, turn right.
And it's just pretty cool, you know? Of course, I had to get one because I borrowed like a week or two ago, I borrowed Alan's Garmin, which is absolutely wonderful device. For anybody who happens to have a car and needs to find someplace, like I did. So, of course, you know, I needed to go somewhere again, and I couldn't get a hold of Alan, so I went and bought my own. But I got the cheap one because, let's face it, I'm cheap and I have no money. So I picked up the Mio C220, which was $250, which for me is a good deal of money. However, like the Garmin that I really wanted was $350, so saving $100 kind of helped. And it's pretty cool. It's a little bit smaller than the Garmin. It fits in your pocket. Seems to work pretty well. The only thing I really wish it did was it had, like, the chick voice on it, because this guy is hard to hear sometimes when you're in a car. And the chick voice on the Garmin was real easy to hear.
How does it
sound? She sounded like she liked me too, you know.
They did a study. They found that.
Hey, Lincoln, you're cute. And turn right in 30 feet.
the fighter planes had like voice activated systems, you know, like warning systems and stuff, and they found that women's voice, you know, men will listen more attentively to a woman. You know, big
See,
big shock there,
is.
You know.
She was looking at me, I could tell.
Well, I think that study also said it was both. The female voice was easier to understand than the male voices were for both anybody.
See, not
pilots.
This guy isn't hard to understand. Maybe he's a little effeminate. That's why he's not hard to understand, or something. I don't know. He's not hard to understand. Not as good as the Garmin, but a damn decent, you know, in its own right.
Now, how does that attach to your car?
Pretty much you get like a super glue and you just super glue a freaking thing to win. No, it comes with an installation kit, right? You get the GPS unit itself, and they give you a two-piece installation kit. Well, actually, three pieces. There's a little clippy holder that goes down to the back of the GPS unit, and that goes onto this movable stem, which has a suction cup on the bottom of it. And that suction cup will... And it's very good, too, by the way. And it's not at all like yours, Alan, that sticks to your window and never, ever comes off.
That welded to the window?
Yeah. This one is actually a really good suction cup, and you can stick it to your window, or they give you this little saucer that you can stick to your dashboard with this self-sticking adhesive tape, which is what I did. And then you can suction cup to the stem to the saucer, and you're good to go. But it's a, you know, a fairly decent design little dealy bob. And like I said, the suction cup on mine is way better than the suction cup on the Garmin, but the Garmin chick is not nicer to listen to.
I gave you a kiss. One more.
Turn right in 30 seconds.
That's right. Now, is that what the Garmin one says? Because I noticed on the Mio...
It's in feet.
Is it in feet? Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. It didn't sound the same to me. And on the Mio, it's in yards, which is a really odd measure for me, I thought. You know,
no,
it'll
I don't
say
think I have yards on mine. I think it tells you miles or feet.
Right. This says miles or yards. So it'll say, you know, turn left in 1,200 yards. And I'm like, 1,200 yards? That's an odd... You know what I mean? For me, that's an odd unit of measurement for you to grasp, you know, in your mind. Most people don't go around measuring things by yards anymore, unless you're, I don't know, maybe if you're a really big football fan or something like that. But
why haven't we switched?
I just thought
to
that was slightly odd.
I remember when we were kids, like back in the late 70s. And
why
early
don't
80s,
we switch to the metric system?
They were talking about that we were going to convert to the metric system, and it never happened.
Blame it on the King of England at the time. They had to come up with, you know, the imperial system that we still use, and it's just one of those carryovers that nobody wants to.
I think we're the only country in the world that still uses it.
There's some random African country I know, but we're the one of the only two that use it.
Because we're Americans, damn it!
I think we should switch back.
And we're dumb.
We should really piss everybody off and switch back to qubits.
NASA would have a really hard time.
You are going 900 qubits an hour.
Qubits.
Yeah. 900 qubits an hour. But you know what, Ed? The whole world uses bits and pieces of imperial measuring systems anyway. For instance, it carries over into everything. For instance, air travel. Hardly ever do you hear, like, you know, how many kilometers high you are. You hear how many miles high you are in here. Same thing with if you're on the ocean, they tell you how many fathoms you are and things like that. They don't say how many meters, you know, deep you are. So, you know, I think it's a lot more prevalent than most people want to admit. They just, it's one of those, you know, European things where it's fashionable to use the metric system, and you know, those silly Americans over there still use that imperial measuring system. You know, and if we're at all that imperial measurement stuff, why the hell don't we change the way we tell time? You know, why don't we change it?
Well, they had that skit years ago on Saturday Night Live of going to a metric time system.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What time is it? 100 o'clock.
100 hour day.
Yep. But I don't know. It's interesting. I still think it's really interesting every now and then if you like I mentioned the qubit. Like if you look at some of the old ways that we used to measure things. Some of that is really interesting, you know. I mean, they based measurement off of the length of
the king's thumbs.
Yeah, but the thumb and the distance between his wrist and his elbow and crap like that. And, you know, how that stuff eventually got standardized. It's interesting stuff. If you're one of those, you know, really odd fact geeks like I am. I know like the answer to every useless piece of information in the world.
You get yourself on Jeopardy, man.
No, because the problem with Jeopardy is that they ask questions that people should know. You know, and I only know like really obscure, stupid things. It's funny. You know, I get the answers for the obscure, stupid trivia questions that they ask on the morning radio shows and stuff. But enough about me. How about Alan?
What about
me? I want to know. Everybody's dying to know the world of Alan.
Get up in the morning, go to work, come home, go to bed. Get up in the morning, go to work, come home, go to bed. Just keep repeating that one over and over again. You got my life. At least right now it is.
Until Friday when we go to the new grand opening of the cigar store.
Yes.
Oh, the one with the giant walking humidor?
Oh, yeah.
5,000 square feet, man.
Oh, yes. It's a beautiful thing to behold.
Actually, I went by that the other, like over the weekend. I didn't even know it was that building. I was thinking it was a different building there. I thought it was the one in front, but it's really the one in back there.
Yes, and it's gorgeous.
It did a nice job on it.
Glorious thing. I wish I had the time to make another trip out to Mr. Stogie's again too.
That was true. Nice. True. That's got to be a Friday thing again.
Yeah,
it's when we can pick up the shootings in Trenton. we can dodge through the shootings in Trenton. It'll be better on a Friday night.
Okay, we're almost to the bridge.
Also, I don't
Everybody
have to get
duck.
Up and go to work. That was a hard night last week, getting up the next morning to go to work. Especially because I had to drive to Connecticut.
Connecticut,
today.
Right? Oh, wow.
Yeah, that wasn't fun. I mean, it wasn't
Where'd
a long
go?
Trip, but it was just... Excuse me?
Where'd you go in Connecticut?
I had to go up to a vendor. We had to do a visit. Yeah, visit with a vendor. Easy for me to say. That was an all-day affair there, sitting in meetings and stuff.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It wasn't bad. It was just long. It was a very long day.
Hey guys, I gotta get going. Apologize to interrupt, but I still have a paper to finish up and it's 10:30. So.
Yeah,
so thanks for
not a problem.
Listen, thanks we really for, appreciate you coming
Thanks for coming on, Andrew.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed
Take
it.
Take care.
So, you too.
Bye. Thanks a lot.
Definitely gonna check out the book. Bye.
So, I guess we gotta start packing it up too, huh? Any last words? Yeah, I got a song for tonight.
I got a couple songs.
Well, send them to me.
Have anybody listened to any of the stuff Jono did?
No.
For his, what was it?
Not a lot of it. I didn't listen to any of it, actually.
Oh, well, neither have I. That's why I was questioning it. I I downloaded something.
Me either. In fact, I didn't even know that he had anything new, so.
Yeah, he did a project a couple weeks ago, and unfortunately I don't have it in front of me in my bookmark. It was a thing for charity.
Yeah. He did
He recorded an album in like 24 hours. And posted stuff.
Awesome. So. Wow, I must have been like hiding somewhere. I didn't even know anything about that.
Big Red Recording.
Yeah, big. I knew it had something to do with Red.
I will check that out. That's
why is it Red?
Thing to do.
I don't really know, to be honest with you.
Big Red Recording.
Otherwise, it would be some other color.
Maybe it was the colors related to the charity. He donated the money.
I think so. Yes, I don't know a whole lot behind the charity.
I hear requests for Europop. We don't have Europop tonight. Nope.
No Europop, man.
Come on, Europop. Europop.
Everybody, whatever Dan says he's playing, it's the complete opposite of what you're expecting.
That's so
funny. All right, so I guess...
Where's ShopRat? ShopRat wants to hear some more of that metal.
All right.
Doesn't he?
Yeah. So
you don't want to play MC++?
I got something geared up for tonight. I have it already on the laptop and ready to go. I didn't know you had anything up on the server. So we'll play your song next week, Pat. Anything else for tonight? Okay.
Nothing for tonight that All I right. have.
All right, then.
I mentioned my Mio, I guess.
Mio.
Some other
things in the work, but maybe that'll be for another day.
All right. Tonight's song selection. Easy listening. But it's not safe for work. So, give you the time now to turn off your MP3 players, plug in your headphones, your AUG players.
Or turn up your MP3 players.
Yes, and realize that this is not safe for work and not safe for the kids. So a little bit of easy listening for your pleasure tonight. I kind of like the message it was sending out, so here it is. Mr. Dead Rabbit. And thank you all for listening.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Why is it if I walk into my high school and shoot every motherfucker who ever pushed me around, beat me up, I'm some sort of misfit? But I drop a bomb on an Iraqi school and I'm a U.S. war hero. Darvis McGarvey lived a hazardous youth. He swallowed all his pain like it was a loose tooth. No one saw the scars that he had inside, and the bruises on the outside were easy to hide. Got teased daily by the jocks. Now everyone's in shock when Darvis pulled out twin Glocks at the homecoming dance. He didn't have a date, but he spent all weekend increasing his firing rate. He rakes the gym floor with gunfire, cutting jocks in half like he was spitting razor wire. Chunks of punks fall to the ground. It's a unique sound when you hear a hollow tip round hit a bully right in his head. Now the casserole valedictorian is brain dead. He used to have a scholarship to UOP, and now he sips protein from an IV. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short, controlled bursts. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short, controlled bursts. Little Sally's life was bad, to say it lightly. Her stepdad raped her nightly. She overate to compensate. Now she's 15. But she's also grossly overweight at school. She gets picked on, pushed, shoved, kicked, bit, spit at, but never showing any love. She didn't want it to be a perpetual plight, so she plays George Bush with a preemptive strike. Blast from a gauge takes her dad's head off, so she heads off to head off her bully's assault. And on twin day, when everyone dressed the same, little Sally brought 10 hand grenades to the pep rally. And little Sally pulled a pin like the scene from Swordfish, but that scene never ends. Grenades may take young preppy lives, but oppression's the weapon that tears souls like knives. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short controlled bursts. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short controlled bursts. All my life, I just wanted to be famous. So I dumped pounds of rounds in the anus of a student body who never bothered to care about the person inside, just the clothes that I wear. All black, trench coat flowing, I'm moving slow motion, I pause to reload. Then I come up with the notion that yesterday I was beaten and poor. Today I'm starring in The Matrix Part 4. Don't beg, ain't no appeal. I ain't stopping, popping till I'm talking to April O'Neil. Channel 6 News with the market share of 20. Ain't it funny? Like listening to a talking dead bunny. You don't have the balls to kill, so you'll tune in with Zoom lens to watch a motherfucker who will. Isn't this the American dream? I'm on the TV screen, world famous at age 17. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short controlled bursts. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short controlled bursts. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short control bursts. You said ignore the bullies, but it still hurts. My life went from bad to worse. There's no American dream for the curse. Now I execute my classmates with short control bursts. Now listen, kids, I just gave you three pretty good reasons to shoot up your school, but there's one really good reason not to. You can't stand the head cheerleader now? You put a bullet in her head? They're gonna name a park after her. You don't like the quarterback? Fuck. You bury him? Sarah McLachlan will sing at his funeral. You wanna make those assholes more popular? Is that what you want?
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
It's over, everybody.
It's over.
You gotta.
Well, that was an interesting song.
Done. Yeah, and you know, it dawned on me like a jackass.
Jesus.
Like a dumb jackass. Like, I listened to this song. I've listened to this song in the past, and I listened to it the other day, and I'm like, wow, this is, you know, a lot of people in our line of work and everything, you know, and being geeks and stuff get picked on a lot. And I thought it had kind of an interesting message. And Dingus, for some jackass reason, forgot what happened to Virginia Tech the other day. And, you know, which is weird because I was calling my uncle who works at Virginia Tech to make sure he's okay. And the whole point is, I guess, you know, it ain't worth it to go shooting up people. But anyway, my heart goes out to the people of Virginia Tech anyhow. My apologies for my inconsiderate behavior. Anything else? Pack it up. I gotta go do some work. All right, then.
Shut up.
Hey.
Have a happy.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.